We are back with Kevin Phillips on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell had just introduced the idea of capitalism as a major thread emerging as a winner in this, and I'm pleased for that transition, because the thing that I'm surprised about as I read about religion, culture, the things that you say tie together the wars, is you're not talking about economics, and yet economics seems to be a real thread in this.
Economics is a real thread. There's no doubt that each one of these wars was a success for those who urged a freer marketplace. Whether it was the Puritans who just wanted to get emerging entrepreneurialism into what had been almost a feudal system in the English economy, or the Americans wanting to break free of the mercantilist system, the Navigation Acts. And in the Civil War, of course, it was emerging industry versus a slave, plantation, aristocracy, the slaveocracy, so to speak. And then capitalism, by some yardsticks, ran amok after the Civil War, and that created the populist and progressive movements. Now, my feeling today is that capitalism, which has its name in lights at the moment, is already running amok, and that it has always been brought to heel after the collapse of major speculative bubbles. And I think we're in another one. And the interesting question is, how big a collapse is it going to be? It's tried to collapse two or three times in the last decade and has been propped up by what I would almost describe as financial mercantilism, which is just trying to aggrandize the financial sector of the economy. Now, if it does bust, what does it bring? And I'm also starting to see in the religious constituencies the rise of a sense that the God of the elders can't survive the God of the marketplace. And that maybe if you believe in the old kind of religion, you don't want people worshiping Charles Schwab and things like that. And if that's a politics coming, it could be an extremely important politics and just change an awful lot of stuff.
You're talking about global issues here. You're not just talking about America, are you?
America is the capital of untrammeled entrepreneurialism. There are parts of Asia that are almost as into entrepreneurialism and finance, but it doesn't have the broad role in the economy from the middle class. And there is a growing body of thought on left and right, and it's amazing, it's in both places, that this whole worship of the market and capitalism is really running amok, and more in this country than anywhere else. And then if it's a bubble that busts, it's going to produce a major, major reaction politically. I think that's true.
I almost had the sense, that reading about the Puritans, again, in the context of these three wars, the almost virulent emphasis on economic exploitation was surprising, because my sense of Puritans is pretty much the second and third degree, 4th of July version of Puritans. But I have the sense, looking at that it, at some point it was reacting to a bad situation, and the tendency is to overstate with respect, and that it was also part of a richer, more complex view of the world. And I have the sense now that what you're talking about, this capitalism run amok, is sort of the reduction to absurdity of what was a pretty good idea, but not the only value applicable.
300 years ago.
Well, there's no doubt about that. The religion of the Puritans has been related by a number of scholars to the rise of entrepreneurialism, because it had a dynamic in common and also a value system, hard work, personal
what
behavior.
What we think of as Calvinist.
Regulated. Calvinist, mm-hmm. But also a very self-regulating, a kind of Protestant ethic culturally. And in that sense, I've always thought that the economic and the religious have been intertwined in each of these wars, and that there was a shared element there. And it was always that some degree of economic entrepreneurialism and aggrandizement was always coming out of the victory of the dissenting Protestant side, because these were not the landed gentry. These were the people who were in finance or industry. Now, even after the Civil War, an awful lot of people in New England were appalled at what won the Civil War. And there was a joke that about all the capitalists in the Midwest and in Pennsylvania, and you could do everything with the oil-owned Pennsylvania legislature, but refine it was a way to sum it all up in one.
John D. Rockefeller,
yes.
Comes to mind.
And a lot of the people involved in the early stages of the Republican Party and the abolitionist movement were just appalled by capitalism and became the Teddy Roosevelt Republicans of the early 20th century. And he campaigned against economic man. He was against the plutocracy. And I think some of that side has got to reemerge in this country, or the values that were represented by these three wars are over.
I want to go back in that context to the notion of politics as a continuation of war by other means. Deborah Tannen talks at some length about the combative nature of all of our institution. Our language has become combative. Lawyers are, you know, at one another's throats. Congress, the parties, everybody's at one another's throats, overstating. But essentially, the metaphor, as she characterizes it, is a war metaphor, that we are at war with one another. I had not thought of it in the terms that you're talking about it, that it is essentially a substitute for war, and may, in fact, for all it has in many ways poisoned the political and social and cultural environment. In a sense, I'm here saying it may be a necessity, and it may be the only way short of war to work through some of the contradictions that you see.
I think one of the questions is going to be, is there a way short of war that works in the broader sweep of history? Clearly, mature societies have a problem with war. They're too comfortable in their boundaries, have been for generations or centuries, so don't really want to fight between X and Y. But all this yeast and temperament and bad blood is there, and all this instinct for combat. And can you work it out if you don't have combat? And will enemies overseas serve the purpose? Can you do a missile strike on somebody far away and work much out? I don't think so.
When you say instinct for combat, you're talking about humans as primates who like to fight, that kind of instinct for, right?
Yes, but it infuses the type of movies we watch, the entertainment we like. I remember going to church in the summer as a kid, and they'd have the hymn sings, and I always wanted the hymns that were the martial hymns. I like them the best. Onward, Christian soldiers, a mighty fortress is our God, yeah. And all of those. Not the quiet, soft ones, the heavy ones.
Foreign wars, though, do not address the internal political problems. I mean, that is in a way, that's what the British were able to do with America, but that is a much more arcane, for the kinds of challenges we have today. It seems like we've got to find a way internally to be able to address this.
Foreign wars, when you have a very mixed population, do reflect internal politics, because you're always having parts of your population very unhappy about the war. But in the larger sense, that the foreign wars where we're mounting a strike against some small little country with a GDP the size of Kentucky, which Iraq did, and I have no idea what some of the others, that doesn't do it. I mean, it may work it out for the small percentage of people who are Muslims or Albanians or in the Balkans or what have you, but for the average American, that doesn't solve anything. The culture wars bring all sorts of things to a boil internally, and the tensions that are aroused by some of these cultural issues are the sort of things people have fought over before. And since we can't now, you sort of wonder how it's all going to be handled, and I think that's one of the real question marks about mature societies, and how do you keep the vitality when you don't have the combat?
Well, you are known as a political analyst. Presumably, you think that part of the answer to this is in the political arena, or have we moved to another place?
Of course, you also left Washington.
Yes, I also left Washington, so yes. I don't think the answers are in the political arena. You have somebody asked me what I thought that the 2000 election would bring, and I said the triumph of nepotism, because you've got George W. Bush, the son of, Al Gore, the son of, Hillary Clinton, the wife of, Elizabeth Dole, the wife of. If these people are going to have a House of Lords, I think they'd change the Senate. So I'm really worried about the political system's ability to do much of anything, frankly.
You talk about the three great losers of these cousins' wars, the Irish, African-Americans.
And Native Americans.
And Native Americans, yeah. Particularly with respect to the challenges, the cultural challenges we face, the Irish seem to have been pretty well integrated. I may be overstating that. Maybe your your political demographic shows you something different. But we still seem to be struggling, perhaps not as much as we should, with the issue of African Americans in a European derived political environment.
Well, what we should do in this case, you've got to take the British Isles and the United States. And as soon as you do that, then you have the Irish pretty well integrated in the United States, still a festering sore in Ireland and in parts of London where they raise all the money for the trouble in Northern Ireland. The British have not been good at absorbing their non-white population. That's a major problem in the United States, too. The Native American population, I suppose you have to say, is in some ways doing the best because Connecticut, where I live, is riven right now by envy of the Pequots and their casinos.
Indian envy.
People are trying to find the 1/8 Pequot ancestry that gets them a slice of the slot machine pie.
Part of the reason I ask that is it seems that, you know, perhaps, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the third way, really a lot of rhetoric about a third way, and you know, looking out, trying to find, you know, the next creative synthesis, something that will get us to, you know, to the past this capitalist affliction. Women have been underrepresented in politics. African Americans have been underrepresented. And some people would certainly say that white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males have been overrepresented in politics. Do you see any positive influence coming from what have been traditionally outsiders in this culture, in this political culture?
And once again, we're going to let him answer that when we return in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. Our guest is Kevin Phillips. We hope you will be here when we come back for a brilliant answer to Bill Russell's question. Please stay with us.